United States. Senator Rand Paul received this short letter from Attorney General Eric Holder. Let me read it to you. It has come to my attention that you have now asked an additional question. Does the president have the authority to use a weaponized drone to kill an American not engaged in combat on American soil? The answer to that question is no. While drones have been associated with attacks on suspected terrorists in other countries, there are other non-military uses for unmanned aircraft, from search and rescue to monitoring the environment. The FAA estimates that in a few years, there will be thousands of drones flying over the U.S. collecting audio and visual data. That has raised concerns about privacy protections and civil rights, our topic for today's Radio Times. We have two guests, both of whom join us by telephone. Jay Stanley is Senior Policy Analyst with the ACLU Speech Privacy and Technology Project. And Jay Stanley, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me on.
Also with us is Ben Gilo, and he's Government Relations Manager and General Counsel for the Association for Unmanned Vehicle Systems International. And Ben Gilo, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Hi, Marty. Thank you.
Let me begin with you, if I could, Ben, because I want to make sure we know what we are talking about. What are the different kinds of drones, unmanned drones, that might be or maybe already are flying over the United States?
Sure. Well, I think that when you use the term drone, probably a lot of your listeners have a preconceived notion of what that is, and I would anticipate a lot of folks think of a large military unmanned aircraft, probably that has Hellfire missiles. That is not what we are talking about when we talk about the domestic use of unmanned aircraft. What we are talking about are, by and large, very small systems that have limited capabilities, but still can be used for a whole host of civil and commercial purposes, and hopefully we'll have some time to get into some of those. But I'd say that right now the folks that do have permission from the FAA to fly, and the FAA is very restrictive on who and what can currently fly, are small systems. So there's a few law enforcement agencies that do have unmanned aircraft, and by and large those systems weigh about 4 pounds or less. They may be more, but by and large, the size is really dictated by the expense, and a lot of law enforcement agencies don't have a lot of money because of tight budgets right now.
And we're talking about gathering audio and visual data?
The agencies that currently have it are using it just for video data. I'm not really sure of them being used for audio right now. But, yeah, it's basically being used in lieu of a manned aircraft to get better situational awareness from basically getting a vantage point from higher up.
To you, Jay Stanley, do you see drones having any usefulness being used and flown over the United States?
Yeah, I think that like any tool, they have a lot of good potential uses, and we're seeing a lot of innovation with drones by hobbyists and other individuals, but they also do have the potential to become the tool for very significant invasions of privacy. So we've just been saying that we need to take the time and have a discussion and a debate about this technology and what its potentials are and put in place some good ground rules to protect our privacy.
What are your privacy concerns, or what are the privacy concerns of the ACLU?
Well, the biggest concern, I think, is that drones become used as a tool for mass suspicionless surveillance. We've had police helicopters for a number of decades, but they're very expensive. They cost millions of dollars, and you have to have ground crews and flight crews and maintenance. And, you know, we could be looking in the future at drones that cost, $100 or less, and police departments that can afford to put hundreds or even thousands of them in the air, and drones that could stay in the air for very prolonged periods of time, equipped with very powerful video cameras, night vision, other kinds of advanced imaging technologies, linked together through artificial intelligence techniques that allow the drones to autonomously coordinate with each other. These things will be technologically possible, and we need to prepare for that kind of possibility. And I think that there is a lot of pent-up demand by police departments around the country to use and adopt drones, police departments that can't afford helicopters or that want to augment their aerial surveillance capabilities. There is a history in this country of police engaging in unwarranted surveillance, in excessive surveillance. And I think that we need to, when we look at the technological dimension and we look at, the tendencies of law enforcement sometimes to engage in excessive surveillance that that makes sense to take some action.
Well, Bencilo, picking up on that, and you represent the Unmanned Vehicle Systems International, does the organization or does the, I guess, the association share some of the same concerns that we're hearing from Jay Stanley?
Yeah, and I think that actually there's a lot that we agree with. And I know Jay. Hello, Jay. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. And we have been proactively talking with a lot of different stakeholders, and I think that Jay hit the nail on the head. This is a new tool that can be used by public safety agencies to increase public safety. But like any tool or any technology, really, you know, there is a potential to do bad. And so how are we going to ensure that this technology is used appropriately and responsibly? We believe that can be done through transparency, something that I know that the ACLU and others certainly support, but also accountability, making sure that policies and procedures are in place so that if this technology is abused, those people are held accountable. And you have to remember that law enforcement has a lot of tools in their toolbox that they can use, and a lot of them could potentially invade your privacy. And they don't use that technology to invade your privacy because they do have these procedures in place. And this would be another tool in the toolbox. It's often compared actually to a canine unit. You know, you have a small unmanned aircraft in the trunk of the police cruiser. The officer goes about his daily business, but if he comes upon a situation where they could use this small unmanned aircraft, they would deploy it. But if they don't need it, it stays in the car just like a canine unit would. So I think it's important to recognize that this is a new tool, and we do trust law enforcement with other tools, and we can put in place policies and procedures to ensure that privacy isn't violated. And before I leave this topic, I would like to point out that the International Association of Chiefs of Police, that's the largest police association, they have, in fact, already put out model guidelines for how these systems should be properly used.
Well, Jay Stanley, picking up on that, do we need a different use of warrants, for instance? As you say, it's suspicionless surveillance. Does that require a different kind of warrant?
Well, you know, I think there's a variety of different conditions in which, situations in which you could imagine drones being used, from, you know, situations in which we really wouldn't have an objection. Let's say the police have a warrant to raid a house because there's a suspected criminal inside and they want to have aerial support. You know, we wouldn't object to that where they have a warrant. On the other hand, if the police wanted to fly a, you know, little tiny insect-sized drone up into your barn or to look inside your third-floor window, you know, I think that's pretty clearly would not be permitted without a warrant under the Fourth Amendment. But then there are other uses, such as, you know, just stationing a drone over a certain neighborhood to look down and watch it 24/7 just in case something happens to happen, or to monitor, you know, peaceful protests in which people are exercising their First Amendment rights. And I think that, you know, with so many police departments across the country, of course, we'll inevitably see a range of different uses of the tool if nothing is put in place in terms of rules. But some of them will engage in very mass sorts of surveillance.
But, well, I'm thinking of that demonstration. What would be the difference between a drone hovering over a demonstration and, let's say, a helicopter that might be trying to observe what's going on the ground, Jay?
Well, that's a very good question, and we're often asked, you know, what's the big deal about drones when we already have helicopters? And,
right.
You know, one of the things is the cheapness of it and the ability to put many, many drones up in the air. And the other answer is, you know, police helicopters are not without their privacy concerns as well. We don't think that police helicopters should be used to record people when they're, you know, in very intrusive ways, especially when they're just engaged in a peaceful exercise of their First Amendment activities. And there have been incidents with police helicopters. For example, there was a police helicopter that was hovering over a protest in New York. I think it was in 2004 during the Republican convention there. And the police swung their camera over to watch a couple making love in a pitch-black rooftop patio and kept the camera there for 30 minutes or so. And the police refused to apologize for that later. So, you know, that's the kind of abuse that we think has happened with police helicopters, but would become inevitably much more common with drones, just because when something becomes cheap and easily accessible, it inevitably becomes overused. And we see that with other surveillance technologies, such as license plate readers or GPS tracking and so forth.
And let me pick up on that and toss that back to you, Ben Tilo. What then is done with information that is collected by drones or an unmanned aircraft?
Well, I'd like to start off by saying that as the industry association that represents the manufacturers and some of the users of this technology, we absolutely do not condone using an unmanned aircraft to illegally spy on someone. And we support prosecuting people that do violate privacy laws. And we fully support the Fourth Amendment's requirement that a search warrant is needed if you're going to invade someone's right to privacy. But like Jay just said, there are some instances where either there is no expectation of privacy or no one would potentially object. Like, for instance, if you're taking crime scene photography or if there's a big traffic accident and you want to take pictures so you can clear the scene more quickly. As far as what's being done with the images, that probably is a better question for the specific users. Mm-hmm. I know that of the few agencies that do currently operate unmanned aircraft for law enforcement and public safety, those groups already have policies in place. And, for example, the Mesa County Sheriff's Office in Colorado, they are one or two or three agencies that have permission to use their aircraft in their jurisdiction. They use it primarily for search and rescue. They have a lot of lost hikers. They also do it for crime scene photographs, by and large. They have a policy, I believe it's even on their website, that talks about data and image retention. Basically what they say is if they need it for evidence, it is. They follow the rules of evidence and they properly store that data. If they need it for training, and if there isn't anything maybe identifiable about a person, or there really isn't any invasion of privacy, they might keep that for training purposes. But everything else that they collect, they delete
because they
don't need it.
And Jay Stanley, we're almost up in a break. Does that in any way mollify you about what's done with this information?
Well, that's the kind of policy that we'd like to see, where, you know, information about innocent people that had sort of incidentally collected and recorded in the course of using drones for other legitimate purposes is not retained. But the fact that there are some police departments that have good policies does not really mollify us, no, because we expect that, number one, all the police departments won't have good policies, and number two, policies, if it's just a sort of a police department internal policy, can easily be changed.
And that's Jay Stanley. He's Senior Policy Analyst with the ACLU Speech Privacy and Technology Project. Also with us, Ben Tilo, Government Relations Manager and General Counsel for the Association for Unmanned Vehicle Systems International. We are talking about some of the pros and cons, concerns, and uses of domestic drones. And we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. What do you think of the use of domestic drones? Give us a call. We'll be right back.
Abington Health supports WHYY and offers a range of cancer treatment options, including new radiation therapies that fight rare and complex cancers. To learn more about their team approach to cancer care and to view patient stories, abingtonpowertoheal.org.
The budgetary discussions currently taking place in Washington present challenges for people in our community and for WHYY. Yet, at the same time, we have continued to expand our services. I'm Bill Morazzo. Your support to WHYY in the last 5 years has offset government losses, yet resulted in the growth of the services you rely on. A donation today will enable us to continue to fulfill our promise to you. Visit WHYY.org to make a donation.
Next time in Studio 360, sometimes movies about science hit a little too close to home.
Watching Gwyneth Paltrow going into a seizure from a viral infection and then having a pathologist cut her skull open, that's pretty gutsy.
Our Viruses, Ourselves. Next time in Studio 360 from PRI and WNYC.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
PICO supports WHYY. The PICO Smart Business e-Audit is an online tool that analyzes and estimates business energy usage and provides customized recommendations to help manage energy consumption. Find more at pico.com/smartideas.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen. We're talking about the domestic use of drones and the issues and questions that they raise, talking with Ben Gilo, I think I'll say your name correctly, Ben, and with Jay Stanley. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Jay Stanley, if we're talking about rewriting or rethinking privacy issues and even warrants, who is responsible for doing this, or who would be responsible for doing this if we're going to have thousands of drones flying over the United States?
Well, ultimately, we'd like to see legislation passed by Congress that would impose a uniform, national, good, strong, you know, privacy baseline expectations around this technology. We have seen some good legislation proposed in Congress, introduced by Representative Poe, Republican from Texas. And we're also seeing legislation proposed in state legislatures around the country. And if Congress doesn't act, then a state legislature can impose a statewide bill. And we've seen drone legislation, almost all of them, which would require warrants for police drone use, introduced in 31 states around the country. And I think that there, you know, it reflects a tremendous amount of concern about drones. And you know, going back to what we were talking about a minute ago, a fact that there are sort of gaps in our current law that leave us sort of unprepared for this technology. You know, I said that it pretty much established that it would require a warrant for a police tiny drone to fly inside your barn or look inside your third floor window. But there are drones there's drone technology now in existence that could simultaneously videotape a 15 square mile area and automatically track every moving object in that area. You know, vehicles, pedestrians, whatever, their starting point, their ending point, every place they stop in between, log those movements into a database and retain them for forever. So we're looking at, you know, potentially a very powerful technology that can track location. And the law around location tracking is very vague and in flux now. The Supreme Court did rule last year in a GPS tracking case that it did constitute a Fourth Amendment search for the government to put a GPS tracker on somebody's car and follow them around for 28 days. The court's reasoning was different depending on different decisions, but that's an area that's in its flux, and that's, you know, I think that's part of what's creating concern about this around the country.
I noticed, Ben, that your organization, Unmanned Vehicle Systems International, doesn't use the word drones. Is there a public relations reason for not using the word drone?
Well, Marty, you know, the term drone is really kind of caught wind in the media and really in the public, but you know, we prefer the term unmanned aircraft system because I think the word drone oversimplifies and kind of creates a negative connotation. It's more than just the vehicle. The unmanned aircraft system is really a system. It's the vehicle, of course. It's also the ground control station. That's how the pilot it flies it from the ground, and then also the data link, how the operator or the pilot controls that aircraft and how the aircraft talks back to that pilot. So it really is more of a complicated system than I think the word drone brings to people's minds.
Are there hobbyists who are building their own drones?
Yes. Yeah, so the hobbyist industry has been around for almost as long as powered manned flight. In fact, there's a very large association that represents those folks. I think they've got 100 or 150,000 members, and it's a pastime that I'm sure a lot of your listeners engage in. The difference between a model and an unmanned aircraft isn't the vehicle, isn't the way you control it. It's the intent. It's the purpose of the flight. At least that's how the FAA makes that differentiation. Mm. So if you're flying an aircraft for fun or for recreation, you're a modeler, and you don't have to comply with the FAA rules. If you are an unmanned aircraft and you are using it for furtherance of a business, so let's say you're a roofer and you want to use a small unmanned aircraft to inspect roofs, you don't have to get on a ladder every time. You can do more home inspections that way. Because that's in furtherance of your business, that's a commercial purpose, and the FAA says, now all of a sudden, you need to comply with all of our FAA rules. And right now, the FAA hasn't written rules for how an unmanned aircraft can safely fly in the airspace for a lot of good safety reasons, and they're working on that. So that's why Congress has told the FAA they need to work towards safely integrating unmanned aircraft, but that's also why you're not seeing a lot of commercial use of this technology yet.
And Jay, for you, Jay Stanley, from the ACLU perspective, are there concerns, different kinds of concerns, if there are commercial uses of drones?
Yes. I think that for us, the commercial uses of drones is a little bit more complicated because, you know, as I said at the very beginning, there are good uses of drones. Right. There is a lot of innovation going on out there. There are tens of thousands of hobbyists who are hacking the drone software. You can buy a drone for a couple hundred dollars. Activists are, you know, hacking the software. They're hacking the hardware. They're using 3D printers to build their own drone parts. And drones do have uses that we think are healthy. For example, there was an OccuCopter that somebody built at the Occupy Wall Street protests, and the police were harassing people who were trying to photograph them, and they wanted to fly a drone above the protests to record the police's activities during, you know, while they were breaking up the protest. You know, drones have been used by Greenpeace. A drone was used in Texas to catch a company that was polluting a river. And so, you know, I mean, our ideal is that the citizens can use photography, including aerial photography, to monitor what the government is doing. But the government shouldn't be monitoring individuals unless it has specific reason that they're involved in wrongdoing. That said, there is a lot of potential for privacy invasions by private sector drones as well. And so, you know, we will need some regulations to regulate private commercial use of drones, but they're going to have to be very carefully written to make sure that they don't. That they aren't overbroad.
Well, and I could also see a private citizen building a drone to maybe inspect their neighbor's backyard, another private citizen's property. Jay?
Yeah, I mean, there's some uses would already clearly be sort of covered by existing peeping Tom laws.
Right.
But it's, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty around the exact boundaries of the law and the capabilities of drones expand. I think that, you know, thousands of clever people are going to invent new uses for them that will raise new issues. We're going to have to proceed very carefully in making sure that we balance First Amendment rights of photography. I mean, the ACLU defends photographers' rights around the country. We see police harassing and sometimes arresting people for trying to take photographs of them. We have many cases around the country of that. And so, you know, we're a defender of the First Amendment right of individuals to take photography from public places. But at the same time, we clearly can't have our skies thick with flying video cameras peering into our backyard and while we try to sunbathe or what have you. So it's a difficult set of issues that we're going to have to work through as a country.
And Ben, looking into the future 5 years ahead, just how thick do you think those skies will be of drones?
Well, Marty, our association is actually releasing an economic report today, as a matter of fact, talking about what this industry could mean for jobs and what it could mean for economic benefit for this country. Because you have to realize that this is really the future of aviation and aerospace, and really you can look at the Department of Defense as kind of the leader on a lot of new technologies, as they always have been throughout our history, and they're training more unmanned aircraft pilots than they are manned pilots, and there's some debate on whether they're actually going to design another manned, you know, fighter or bomber. That is the human even needed in that aircraft? And I think that in the future we're moving that way, just like our association works with driverless cars as well. But I'm sure that's a discussion possibly for another day.
But it is.
But what our report is ultimately going to say is that when the FAA figures out the safety rules, this new industry has the potential to create 70,000 new jobs within the first 3 years of having access. And we're talking about a potential to have $13.5 billion worth of economic impact. So this is also a competitiveness issue and a technology issue. The United States is not the only country developing this technology to use for a whole host of uses, like Arctic research and firefighting and mining and farming. And I would like to point out that our report says that about 80% of this commercial market is going to be in agriculture, precision agriculture, for both monitoring crops and also applying pesticides. And a lot of folks will say, well, why why is that? Why would ag be so interested in this? Well, for tens of thousands of dollars, you can give a farmer a small unmanned aircraft, and he can monitor his crops. The aircraft can fly a precision GPS route around his field and show what areas need watering, what areas might have insects, what areas need blight. That way, they can water that specific area, or they can apply pesticides that specific area. That increases yields, it decreases costs, and it's better for the environment because you don't have a lot of runoff.
Well, we are talking about the domestic use of drones, some of the issues and questions that they raise. That's Ben Gilo, a government relations manager, general counsel for the Association for Unmanned Vehicle Systems International. Jay Stanley also joining us by telephone, senior policy analyst with the ACLU Speech Privacy and Technology Project. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. You've heard some of the pros and cons of domestic drones, and we want to know what you think. Let me get Chris from, looks like Lower Merion, to join us on Radio Times. Chris, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I wanted to say that I do recognize that there are benefits to drone surveillance, but I have to say that I'm by and large against it. And I say this because not so long ago in the Philadelphia area, we had a little taste of this. The Lower Merion School District, which is, of course, a state government entity, had required-issued computers that it gave to its students, and they were equipped with cameras, and this wasn't disclosed to the students. And so these computers were being monitored actively, and in the end, they were brought home to the students' houses, their bedrooms, and ultimately a student did bring suit because of the invasion of privacy. And right. I think the figure was something along the lines of 50,000 images were determined to have been downloaded. And ostensibly, the reason for the cameras was to somehow circumvent theft or to help with it.
Chris, I don't want to get too deep into the story. I know exactly what you're talking about because we did some shows about it. I want to make sure we stick to the drones, but it sounds like you're saying, can we trust the people who are monitoring what it is that we do?
That's right.
Exactly. Well, Ben Gilo, can we?
Well, Marty, and I think Jay talked about it earlier. This is a new technology, and like any technology, it could be used for good or for bad, and we need to mitigate the bad. And ultimately, our association believes that the information gathered by an unmanned aircraft should be treated no differently than information gathered by a manned aircraft or other electronic means. And so what I mean by that is the conversation should really be about whether you have the right to collect information, not necessarily how you collect it. And I think that this is a broader privacy debate that Jay alluded to earlier, that we need to think about how government in particular can collect, use, store, share, and delete data on people. And this issue is bigger than just unmanned aircraft. I mean, you can gather personal data about where a person is located by the GPS on their phone, and chances are almost everyone listening to your show is carrying around a GPS tracker right now, and a lot of them are probably logging in and geotagging all of their photos as well. So this is a bigger issue, and I just want to make sure that folks don't, to single out this new specific technology when really we need to have a broader debate.
Well, picking up on that and going back to you, Jay Stanley, what kind of reasonable expectation do we have of our own privacy when we're in public?
Well, I think that, this Marriott School District scandal about the camera laptops is just a reminder of just how strong the human urge to abuse these kinds of technologies can be, and how strong the balances and checks and balances and protections need to be. In terms of privacy in public, I mean, we often hear people sort of glibly say, oh, you're in public, you have no expectation of privacy, so forget about it. But, in fact, we do have a lot of privacy when we're not inside the four walls of our own home, in many dimensions that we shouldn't easily give up. You may be visible to those who are right around you, but you don't expect that somebody is following you as you run errand to errand and go to your school, to your employer, to visit your friends, their lovers, whoever else you're visiting. You don't expect that somebody has a bird's eye view of all that movement. And if somebody were to follow you around, whether it was a police officer or anybody else, for extended periods of time, you'd get a little freaked out probably. But yet that can be done silently and invisibly through drones. drone technology, but also, as Ben said, through other technologies as well. And those are serious privacy problems that we are fighting over in terms of GPS tracking through phones and so forth.
Is it the bird's eye view that you find troublesome? Because I'm thinking about all the cameras at intersections, for instance, and the fact that everyone has a cell phone and everyone can take someone else's picture while they're out in public.
Yeah. It is. It's the sort of completeness of records of our movements that is now possible to record so easily. When there's a great quote in a legal opinion from last year that says, you know, when you know somebody's movements over an extended period of time, you know whether they're a regular church goer, whether they're a faithful spouse, whether they are politically active, you know a lot of things about them. And so there's a disjunction between how intrusive that is and the fact that our laws aren't really, have never anticipated this technological capability and don't really take account for it. And so that's why we're seeing, as I mentioned, the Supreme Court case, Jones v. U.S., this decided last year on GPS tracking. We're seeing the court starting to grapple with this very question, and it will have big implications for drones.
But do you think it's possible, again, I guess looking into the future, that the court system can come up with something that protects people in private but also allows, you know, police to do search and rescue, or as Ben was describing, crop management or tracking, you know, climate change issues? Stan, Jay?
Yeah, I think that balance should be able to be reached. I think that, I mean, in a report that we wrote in 2011 on drones, and when we called for the police to be basically banned from using drones except where they have reasonable and specific articulable grounds to believe that the drone will uncover evidence of a crime, or if there's an emergency, or for reasonable non-law enforcement uses, such as by environmental groups and so forth. So, I think that those distinctions can be drawn.
Hey, Marty, could I comment on that?
Please, I was just going to go to you, Ben. Go ahead.
Great, thanks. And I just want to point out that, a lot of the legislation that's been introduced in Congress and in the state capitals that would limit the ability of government, in particular law enforcement, to use this technology is something that our association does not support. And the reason for that is that these bills would fundamentally change the current search warrant requirements, which the courts have ably shaped over the past 225 years. And there's no reason to think that the courts are somehow unable to deal with this new technology, just as they have with any other technology. And again, I think the issue should be focused on the extent to which the government can collect, use, and store personal data, which is why transparency and accountability is so key. And so, we agree with a lot of what the ACLU says. The problem is that the bills that they're supportive of and are pushing at the state level would in fact change the search warrant requirements specific to an unmanned aircraft. And our response is, no, it shouldn't be specific to an unmanned aircraft. We should talk about privacy issues writ large, because our fear is that by stifling or preventing public safety from using this new technology to decrease costs and potentially save lives, you know, you're taking a valuable, a great potential tool out of the toolbox for law enforcement or for public safety, and ultimately all of us could one day be saved by that technology.
Well, we are talking about the domestic use of drones, and we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Folkways at Gwynedd supports WHYY. Guided by time-honored Quaker values, Folkways is a continuing care retirement community for adults 65 and over. Since 1967, Folkways has been providing its residents with a comprehensive health program and financial stability. Folkways is committed to friendship, caring, and respect as a way of life. For more information or a personal tour, the number is 215-283-7010.
On the next Fresh Air, Adrian Young, a former hip-hop DJ who's now a composer and producer and takes his inspiration from the soul music of the 60s and European film composers like Ennio Morricone. Young produced the new Ghostface Killah album and produced and co-wrote a new album with William Hart, who was the lead singer of the Delfonics. Join us
this afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. The wait for the white smoke begins as the Catholic Cardinals conclave gets underway. Also, actors Zachary Quinto and Cherry Jones and company on making Tennessee Williams' The Glass Menagerie new again. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. It looks like unmanned aircraft are going to become more common in the skies over the United States. They can be used to track down criminals for things like search and rescue, for mapping, research, and disaster relief. And there are some growing concerns about issues of privacy, civil rights, even safety. We're talking about all of this with Jay Stanley of the ACLU and Ben Gilo of Unmanned Vehicle Systems International. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Jay, I noticed that a number of communities, including Charlottesville, Virginia, has banned drones over the city limits. We also learned from some FAA reporting that a number of municipalities want drones, want access to drones over their city limits. Do you think local municipalities should have the right to decide whether they do or don't want drones?
Yes, I think that should be something that should be democratically decided, and that there should be other controls on drone use, such as public notice about the policies and procedures that police are following, auditing and effectiveness tracking, so that when a police department does buy a drone, they can establish that the public is getting a good bang for their buck in terms of how it's being used, and also auditing to prevent sort of abuses and so the public can make sure that drones are being used adequately. And, you know, I think around the country we're seeing an enormous response to this technology, and we're seeing a variety of different bills. Some of them are overbroad, and many of them are very, very well-crafted. I think that we're seeing the public and the political system start to grapple with this technology and its privacy implications, and that in itself, in a way, is unusual, because what we see in tracking various technologies that have big privacy implications is what I call sometimes policymaking by procurement. Instead of having a democratic debate about a new technology and its privacy implications, the police just go out and buy it and start using it before anybody really knows, often funded by grants from the Homeland Security Department, so that they don't have to go through democratic funding mechanisms locally. Here, because of the very significant safety issues around drones, and the FAA has basically been holding back their deployment, it's created a space in which we have had time to create a democratic discussion around this technology. And so, you know, I think that that's what we're seeing in the state legislatures. We're seeing a great variety of different bills being proposed, and some of them will be better than others, inevitably.
Well, Ben, I noticed that in Charlottesville, which has apparently banned drones over the city limits, a councilman there described drones as Big Brother. Is he right about that?
I don't know about Big Brother, and I certainly don't know why, you know, out of all the technologies, you know, he's picking on something that that really isn't even flying over his fields. I mean, I think, again, this is a bigger debate that we need to have about individuals' rights to privacy, and what does the government have the right to collect on an individual? And that's something that the courts have historically been the ones to shape, that they're really the ones that have shaped a lot of the Fourth Amendment jurisprudence out there, and we think that they're certainly capable of handling this new technology.
Let me see what happens. Yeah, go ahead. No, go ahead, Jay.
I guess in our view, the leaving it to the courts is not adequate, because the courts historically have been very slow to adapt to new technologies, and they're just starting to grapple with some of these questions a little bit. But, you know, the court has ruled in the 1980s that in a case of a guy who the police suspected was growing marijuana in his backyard, but he had a very high fence, they couldn't see into it, so they just flew over it with an aircraft, and the court said that you do not have a Fourth Amendment right to privacy from the air. And it took the Supreme Court 40 years to recognize that the Fourth Amendment protected telephone calls, the privacy of your telephone call, and the police couldn't listen to your telephone call without a warrant. They originally said, oh, because the telephone lines leave your house, they're not protected by the Fourth Amendment, but it took them a long time to sort of update that. And so, you know, I think that one of the reasons we're seeing so much legislation is because of the feeling that the technology is just moving so much faster than our slow-moving jurisprudence can keep up with.
But does it make sense to have lots of little laws all over the country, or something broader that covers everybody, Jay?
I think ultimately it would make sense to have one national standard, and we'd like to see Congress put in place a really good policy. The advantage, of course, of having multiple different laws is that, you know, you get the laboratories of democracy effect, where different states can try different things, and Congress can see what works well and what doesn't. So there are probably advantages and disadvantages to both approaches.
Let me get some callers in on the conversation at 1-888-477-9499. Looks like we have Hap from Germantown. And Hap, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thanks.
You're welcome.
Earlier question of yours that wasn't answered on the density of these flying objects raises the question of liability. And in cars, planes, boats, we have liability insurance and things that are required with serial numbers on the vehicles. If a 4-pound, which doesn't sound like a lot, falls out of the sky and hits somebody in the head, there's going to be a liability issue. How is this covered currently, and what's anticipated? Thanks.
You're welcome, Hap. Thanks for the call. Ben, I'm tossing that to you. Go ahead.
Sure. Thanks, Hap. It's an excellent question, and one that really has not yet been resolved. Because the FAA only allows public entities to currently operate in the national airspace, the liability issue really hasn't come up, because a lot of either public agencies or public entities are either exempt from liability, or they're already covered. So, like, if a fire department wants to use one, they're already covered usually under their municipal insurance. But as we move into, the commercial use, you're absolutely correct. I mean, there are going to be liability and registration issues, and our association certainly supports requiring registration of not only the aircraft but also the pilots to make sure that they are adequately and properly trained and that they know what they're doing and that they do carry some kind of insurance so that if there is an accident, that issue is taken care of.
Jay, you want to add to that?
No, I don't have anything to add.
Okay, fair enough. Let me go back to something that I said at the very beginning of the program, and this was the short letter that Eric Holder wrote to Senator Rand Paul. As we know, Rand Paul filibustered Brennan's nomination, but he raised some questions about the use of domestic drones or weaponized drones, actually, to kill Americans, told by the Attorney General this is not going to happen in the United States. And to you, Jay Stanley, does that answer satisfy you?
We think that the administration needs to be much more forthcoming about their use of weaponized drones in foreign countries, and I think that the way that they have been excessively secretive about that has just added to the controversy swirling around drones. I mean, you asked Ben earlier about the term drones, and
yes.
Ben was saying that it can be unfairly, has bad connotations in some ways. And I think that if drones are used in bad ways, the word will have bad connotations. If they're used to save people who are lost in the wilderness and for environmental reasons and in reasonable police uses, then the word will come to have good connotations.
But it sounds like you're saying that the Obama administration created this problem for themselves by not being more transparent about what they're doing with drones overseas.
Yeah, and there was an earlier hearing at which Brennan was asked if the administration thought that it could kill an American citizen on American soil, and he did not answer. And I think that really piqued a lot of concern.
Did that also, Ben, concern the Association for Unmanned Vehicle Systems International?
Well, Marty, I certainly think that, the conversation and the discussion, a lot of the media attention in particular, has been focused on whether the administration has the right to use, a, quote, drone to carry out kind of the strike. That's kind of the red herring. The issue is, does the administration have the legal authority to kill an American without due process? Who cares if it's done with a rifle or a manned, or any other kind of a way to kill someone? So, I think that by tying in, Hellfire missiles and Predators, you're ramping up the discussion, and it's not really constructive, because that's not what we're talking about domestically.
Jade, this is a whole other discussion for a whole other show, but just to give you a chance to respond to that. But if we're talking about weaponized drones, does it matter how we kill terrorist suspects who might be Americans?
I think the issue with drones is what I alluded to earlier, which is when the technology becomes very easy to use, we often see it become overused. And so it's true that in some ways the technology doesn't matter, but in other ways it does matter, because when things become very cheap and free and costless, then it becomes all too easy for them to be abused.
Let me get back to our callers at 1-888-477-9499. Looks like we have Paul from Edgemont joining us. And Paul, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, good morning, buddy.
Good morning.
I originally came from England, and I guess the place seems besieged with cameras. And if we all watch the terrorist happenings in England, people were picked up, being shown coming into railway stations, and they were kind of tracked. I don't like the idea of drones, but the playing at devil's advocate, what are the constitutional restrictions to having thousands and thousands of policemen all over the place and using their eyes standing on every single corner just to deter crime, versus the idea of one drone performing that function for, instead of having cops on rooftops and on every corner? So I see it, I'm a bit kind of torn by the way I feel about it.
Well, no, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And Jay, let me toss that first to you, but Ben, I'd like to hear from you as well. Jay, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I think that we never have had a society in which there is a policeman or policewoman on every corner watching us at every moment, and I'm not sure that Americans would like that kind of a society. And I think that we now have a situation where very, very suddenly we have a technological capability to do the equivalent, and that's what's leading to so much concern about drones around the country. I think that you can easily imagine sort of human equivalents for these technologies, and that it shows it could be a good way of sort of visualizing what the power of these technologies is, and it can also be it also is a reminder that that the technology really allows something to be done which could never be done 10 or 20 years ago, when it had to be done in a human way. One of the issues around the tracking of GPS that was argued before the Supreme Court last year was whether the GPS was really no different than a suspect being tailed for 28 days straight by a team of police officers, and it was pointed out that that would have been an incredibly expensive operation, right, requiring three shifts of three to four police officers full time for a month, and how difficult that would have been. And yet all of us en masse can be tracked at that level now using current technology for almost for very little cost.
Ben, can you relate to Paul's struggle and perhaps even ambivalence about all of this?
Well, Paul, to specifically answer your question, there is nothing legally preventing law enforcement from tracking you, on foot or via cars or whatever. Jay said that it might be expensive and therefore unlikely, but there's nothing legally prohibiting that kind of activity. And, police can right now use a lot of different technologies, and it kind of seems foolish to me that we're going to allow, potentially criminals and everyone else to use technology, but then all of a sudden prohibit law enforcement from using this technology. I think that that's the wrong approach. I think that we should have policies and procedures to make sure that police use that technology appropriately, and if they do want to target surveillance on someone, that they do that properly. And if they are going to surveil someone where they have a right to privacy, they have to get a search warrant. That's law today. It'll be law tomorrow, regardless of technology being used.
Let me get that. Looks like Gillian from Center City, Philadelphia, to join us on Radio Times. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
My issue has to do with air traffic control. It seems to me the other objects that we have flying through the sky these days are monitored and controlled by air traffic controllers, and who's going to be watching out that these objects don't bump into each other? I mean, someone before asked about what if they fall out of the sky, the liability, but my question is, what about the volume of traffic and what is being planned for that kind of problem?
Who's in charge? Ben,
if any.
Ben, do you want to take
that? Yeah, who's in charge?
Yeah, Ben, yep. Go ahead.
Yeah, be happy to. Thanks, Julian. So the issue of kind of, it boils down to sense and avoid. It's ultimately the pilot's responsibility to see out the windshield and avoid other obstacles. Air traffic controllers really only get involved in separating air traffic at very high altitudes or very close to busy commercial airports. There's a whole lot of the United States that is untowered or doesn't have air traffic control, and so you can you can buy a general aviation aircraft, you could buy a Cessna or a helicopter, and you can go out and fly that. And sometimes you don't even need any electronics at all in the aircraft, and you're still allowed to fly under the FAA rules. So how is an unmanned aircraft going to be able to fly in that same airspace without causing collisions or problems? That is a significant safety challenge that I certainly don't want to minimize. But there's also a lot of technological work being done to address that issue. And the principal technology is called sense and avoid, having the unmanned aircraft be able to use radar or the transponders to determine where other air traffic is and to make maneuvers to avoid any of those collisions. That will not only benefit unmanned aircraft, but it will also have benefits for all of aviation, including manned aircraft, because it will make the air traffic system much safer.
Thanks for the call. Jay Stanley, I'm giving you the final word. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
Well, I just think that that the technology is moving very, very quickly, and the fact that, you know, using humans to do the equivalent of tracking people would be so expensive and so, as Ben said, unlikely, shows exactly why it has not been done for most people. And the fact that it is now becoming much more likely means that we need to respond with good, strong privacy protections to protect the privacy that Americans in our culture and our heritage have always expected and enjoyed. And the technology is not in control. We are in control, and we can decide how we want to allow the technology to be used and how not to be used.
Well, my thanks to both of you for joining us today in Radio Times. Jay Stanley, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
And he's Senior Policy Analyst with the ACLU Speech Privacy and Technology Project. Ben Gilo, thank you very much as well.
Thank you, Marty.
You're
thanks,
welcome.
Jay. I had a good time.
Had a good time as well, learned a lot. And he's Government Relations Manager, General Counsel for the Association for Unmanned Vehicle Systems International. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscone. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times, but stay with us. We'll be right back. And do stay with us for the second hour of Radio Times. We'll be talking about a documentary that looks at a celebration that was part of a benevolent society of freed black slaves back in the